Hello all, and welcome into another episode of the Poetry Tavern. I'm your host, as always, Charlotte, and this week we're doing an interview with Evelyn Crabell. I say doing as if I've not already done, but you guys are going to hear it, and it was so fun. She's just great, and the poem she brought was great. But yeah, I'll let you guys listen to that without me waffling on any more than I already do in the interview. All right, here we go. Okay. Well, good morning, Evelyn. Thank you so much for coming onto my podcast today. How's your morning treating you? We're recording this quite early, so probably not too much into the day yet.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Charlotte. Lovely to meet you. Yeah, I'm doing really well this morning. Thank you. And yourself?
Yeah, good. You know, just cracking on. So why don't we start with you telling us a little bit about yourself?
Sure thing. How do I start? So I'm not that there's necessarily so much to say, but I'm a trans poet. I'm 25. I live in London. I'm originally from Romania. I came to this country at 14, which is actually kind of when I really got into reading, especially in English directly. I went to Oxford briefly to study English. Then I withdrew during the pandemic. I had a corporate career basically for a few years and recently recently left my career really to focus full time on writing.
Nice. And what was it specifically that like prompted you leaving this corporate career?
I think I've been trying to balance writing with a very demanding kind of full time job. And I guess I noticed that it drew from the same pot, and as sort of my career got better, I could see that I was sort of putting fewer and fewer pennies into the writing pot, as it were.
Yeah. So your experience with, you're talking about them drawing from the same pot. Do you think now that you've moved back into sort of a more poetry focused lifestyle, let's say, that you sort of draw on your experience from like your corporate, like, does that influence your poetry anyway?
I think it influenced it a lot more when I was in the middle of it. And actually, I had so many poems about writing to work and being, you know, quite depressed about Liverpool Street or whatever in London. Since I've kind of taken a break from working and focused full-time on writing, I actually found that a lot different things from life that I haven't had the time or space to process are coming to the surface. So poetry has been really valuable as a space for that.
So what do you find is the sort of big focus of your poetry nowadays?
I find my poetry is like quite circumstantial. I think one of the first things that I did though, like once I actually sort of started to look at all of it, is literally lay out all the poems that I have in the archive and try to categorize them, because this question comes up so much, like, oh, do you write about love? Do you write about nature? Do you write about this?
Yeah.
And it turns out I write a lot about love, though I would not have identified as a love poet.
Yeah. When you're sort of like writing about like love, do you draw on personal experiences? Is it sort of like, I was speaking to a guy on here the other week who, he had written several love poems, but his love poetry came from a thing of he experienced romance but felt it very different than his expectations as a child, and a lot of his poetry was, so do you think the sort of love poem you write draws from personal experience, or is it sort of like a based on expectations of romance?
Oh, that's such a great question. I mean, I guess in many ways it's rooted, of course, in personal experience. That's what kind of prompted. But I guess I find that I often do engage in effectively a comparison or judging of how personal experience measures up to what, you know, other women have experienced in my life, what my mother has experienced, maybe literary figures or myths or whatever. So what a way to not feel your emotions sometimes and to just be like, ah, this is just like this myth or that myth or whatever.
Yeah, you sort of find yourself in the story and put it on someone else instead temporarily.
If it's deeply embarrassing, I think I tend to do that a lot more. Yeah. Which I can't remember which, I think it was Adrienne Rich who was talking about this actually, who like at some point in her early career, I guess, when she was writing about deeply embarrassing stuff, she just used the third person a lot. But really, she was talking about herself.
This isn't me, guys, I promise. So you talked about like being into like English like stories from like 14 when you like moved to England. When did you start writing for yourself? Like, when did you start creating these things instead of just consuming them?
Yeah, I think they kind of happened simultaneously, really, which I guess does make quite a common experience even for much earlier readers, where they read a bit and they're just like, I'm going to write the story to end all stories. So yeah, I think I started that, especially for GCSE and A-levels, and I probably got a lot more serious at university when people started, I guess, considering that as a more serious thing to possibly be doing, I guess.
Do you think, like, as a teenager writing, that you experienced like a supportive environment for it?
My teachers were very supportive, actually, and I remember quite early, especially at once I started A-levels, that my English teacher was kind of like, oh, there's this Winchester Poetry Festival, there's this, there's that. So that was really helpful. Obviously, since my parents are Romanian and we speak Romanian at home, and their English is not necessarily at the level that they would read English poetry and be like, this is so clever, this is so interesting. I think I had to rely a lot on like outside the home support network for that.
Okay, well, I have asked you to bring some poems for me today. Yes. If you'd like to start with a poem of your own. So feel free to talk about it a little bit before we start. We will be talking about it after, because I will probably be gobsmacked, as has been my experience when I've done interviews and just sort of sit at the end and go, yeah, that was,
oh, that's very sweet. Well, I'm hoping my poem is relatively self-explanatory. It's about the Elizabeth Line, or I guess it's addressed at the Elizabeth Line in London. I don't know exactly where most of your audience is based, so apologies if this is very London.
I mean, for me, this is like, I've lived just outside of London. I've had experience with the Lizzie Line.
Cool.
I know how it works.
Happy days. Shall I start?
Yeah, go ahead.
Cool. To the Elizabeth Line. Our Lizzie, London's heaven, hallowed be thy AC. We love when you unzip those doors and sigh that chilly breath on us. We'll always come to you. We so love what you've done with the place. But this tendency to station far from all these other lines, forgiven, Queen. And who could blame you? All this screech and scrape just chisels every tunnel in one's ears. But for the central liners, here's just our daily bread. So we love that you instead hum through. We love your everlasting spine, so clean and lined with quiet seats, then pairs that huddle up like swans, and love this light, this steady silver, silky purple walls, ever tempting to forget that you are just another who delivers onto evil.
God, that's so good. Yeah, I'm just like sitting here thinking about the train, just like, yeah, this is exactly what a lot of people probably think about the train, but they don't have the poetic language that you're using to sort of explain it. What was, like, obviously the inspiration is the Lizzie Line. What was sort of the, like, did it just strike you out of nowhere? Is this a train that you get a lot? Like, what prompted the love letter to the Lizzie Line?
First of all, thank you very much for the kind words. To your question, so I currently, where I live, I'm on the central line primarily, and I think what prompted it was a combination of this heat being insane lately and taking anything but the Lizzie Line, which is, I think, the only line that has AC, just being like a really traumatic experience. And I think we took the Lizzie Line once and I was like, oh my God, this is she needs to know how I feel about her. This is fabulous.
I'm a big user of the District Line, but it's not the cleanest train. It's not the nicest train. It like has a lot of time above ground, and then you're suddenly in darkness for ages. So like whenever I'm on the Lizzie Line or like the C2C or God forbid the Greater Anglia, like,
oh,
like, oh my God, This is a breath of fresh air. So I,
literally, yeah.
Yeah, I can breathe in this train. So I very much felt like, yeah, this is deserved for the... She took a while to get here, but she's arrived.
We love her. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Do you... Here's an interesting question. You said that you write a lot of love poetry. Would you include this in sort of that collection of love poetry?
Oh, that's so interesting. I actually would consider this more as... I call them city poems.
Okay.
Just because I think I, for the places or the things that I kind of went to quite a lot or went once and it really moved me, I just would just kind of write something that would be very specifically about London. So I think I've written one about the Weaver Line, which is where I lived previously. That's an overground, not an underground. And then I went once to the Hunterian Museum and yeah, and I wrote a poem about the collection. And I guess for those who don't know, the Hunterian Museum is I believe the only museum that has, I guess, like human remains on view, really. And actually I've recently sent it to the Hunterian Museum themselves just in case to see if they could add that to the website or the brochure or something, if they like it. If not, they can just leave it.
Yeah, it's up to them.
Yeah.
The museum now.
Yeah.
Okay. I wanted to talk with you about a poem that you like or that inspires mm-hmm. you from someone else.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have an example for us today?
I do. And so I chose Wild Geese by Mary Oliver. And, you know, this kind of exercise is always very funny. I don't know if you relate to this, Charlotte, but sometimes when people are like, oh, can you just bring a poem? There's this pressure to bring like a really obscure poem, you know, to just be like, you know, I'm learned. I know poems other than the ones that everyone kind of, you know, knows. But I really love Wild Geese. And I have kind of like lots to say about it. And
don't worry. I started this poem on the backbones of Christina Rossetti and the A-level English literature curriculum. So don't even worry about it.
Fabulous. Okay, so I'll start by reading it. Wild Geese by Mary Oliver. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over announcing your place in the family of things.
Every time that poem is...
I know, every time.
What is it specifically for you that, like, if you can name it, because I know that sometimes like, I'm reading something and I'm like, there's something in my chest that just like this loves this. But is there something like nameable that you can sort of place why this poem is so good to you?
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting that you say that because it sounds like you experience poetry like very... like in your body, like emotionally, you know, like it just hits you and then maybe you go from there, as it were. Whereas I think that because my introduction to writing and reading has been so like English focused and then all of that, so often I can read something that, oh, the technique of this and that really strikes me. And it's actually kind of been a bit of a journey to be like, yeah, but what does it make me feel if I just...
Yeah.
Forget about all of that because it makes life very miserable to just engage with everything that way. But I guess to actually answer your question, I think I just love that it calls out to the reader. For me personally, I think just this opener, you do not have to be good. I mean, yeah. What a fabulous opening to a poem. And, you know, it kind of reminds me a little bit of Vienna by Billy Joel, the song, because it just really, I guess, speaks to this anxiety about potential or about failing or about not being good enough in your own life. And I actually, I wouldn't say that I love nature poetry inherently, but I really, really love Mary Oliver exactly because, you know, she engages with nature for this, you know, it's its own pleasure for her. But very often when I kind of read her poetry, and maybe the sense that I get from her as well, is that nature is a very chill reminder of our insignificance, but also our just perfection as we are right now, and of not taking ourselves too seriously, but taking ourselves seriously enough to go for it and do it healthily, I guess.
Yeah. Don't take yourself too seriously, but take it seriously enough to care about it.
Yeah, exactly that.
I think that a lot of nature poetry for me is like, yeah, you can bet that insignificance of like we are just a small part of this big world that we live on.
Mm-hmm.
But I also feel like a lot of it is like taking a look at nature and seeing that within ourselves as well. Like mm-hmm. we are part of this bigger thing. It's sort of like it's saying at the end of the poem of like seeing yourself in this sort of family. Like we're all connected. Yeah. We're still like we're connected by this like orb we live on. We're all tied down by the gravity. Somewhere or another. So yeah, I just, like that's really lovely part of that poem. Well, that brings us to the end of our interview. Thank you so much for coming on. Do you have anything that you would like to talk about that you've got coming out in the next couple of weeks, next couple of months, before the end of the year?
Oh, before the end of the year. I mean, I started this break mostly to focus on poetry and I ended up writing a novel. So I'm kind of working on that and I expect that to be done hopefully before the end of the year, but whether that will be sort of published by then we shall see.
I will keep an eye out. Is there like socials that people can follow you on to keep an eye out for sort of when that's coming?
Yes, so I'm on Instagram at Evelyn Kroval, one word. That's EvelynKroval, which is just my name, so you should find it.
Perfect. Well, I really appreciate you coming on. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Oh, hi. And that brings us to the end of our episode. Thank you so much for joining me in the tavern today. I really appreciate it. If you want to see more of Evelyn's stuff, please go and check her out. She's great. I will attach some links in the show notes for people who want to go and check that out. Next week, I don't have an interview. I've got a couple that I'm sort of still organising. So we'll get to that eventually. But next week, we're going to do an episode on aliens because I realise I've done space and I've done planets. And I haven't done aliens. So we're going to get to that. And then next week is episode 51. So the week after will be 52. And I'm going to make that our official anniversary episode. So I'll cook something up for that. I'll see you there. Bye.